You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 395 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this Friday afternoon. A pretty ugly day here in Atlanta, but as we get into the weekend, always exciting to get into the weekend. And it's sort of crazy in the NBA world right now. Most of that does not have to do with the Atlanta Hawks after the wild game one of the NBA Finals, of course, and the Brian Colangelo situation up in Philadelphia. But there is some news to hit on the podcast today. And beyond that, we will do the point guard preview in advance of the NBA draft. You'll see when we get there that how I will be breaking down the position groups as we move forward. But point guard is pretty easy to discern. And as a result of that, that's pretty straight ahead. And we'll get there in a moment. But until then, the first thing on the agenda is the fact that Lloyd Pierce has reportedly hired Matt Hill out of the Orlando Magic organization to be an assistant coach. Hill is a pretty young guy, someone I honestly had not really heard of before this. I have to be candid about that. But he was, I guess, the only holdover after the Magic cleared house once they fired Frank Vogel. They were seemingly prepared to hang on to Matt Hill per Josh Robbins of the Orlando Sentinel. But he also reported that Hill will be the guy coming to Atlanta. He got his start in Orlando in 2012 as a video analyst. And he's basically a pretty young guy. One of those things where he was actually at University of Texas before that. And somebody that I don't know very well, but the staff is beginning to come into shape here. I have heard good things. Reached out to a couple people in Orlando in the last day or so since that was announced, or I guess since word broke, because it actually hasn't been announced by the Hawks at this point in time. But some positive reports there from Matt Hill. Again, candidly, you know, it's just as a coach that I don't know anything about, but still upbeat and one slot remaining in terms of someone that has to be hired by Lloyd Pierce in the coming days. That leaves, of course, Melvin Hunt as the lead assistant, Marlon Garnett and Chris Gent, and now Matt Hill to fill out the roster of sorts when it comes to assistant coaches. Moving on from there, one interesting note that I saw actually this week is that Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, the guys at ESPN, whether it be Woj and Mike Schmitz and Jonathan Gaboni, those guys did an NBA draft special sort of mock situation. And during that, Wojnarowski reported that the Denver Nuggets have been trying to get off of Kenneth Faried's contract. As a result of that, they're reportedly willing to at least consider parting ways with the number 14 pick in the NBA draft. When that word came across me before I actually watched it, somebody was just tweeting about it, and I immediately mentioned that the Hawks should be at least trying to get in the mix there if that reporting is true. And as a result of that, a lot of people were asking me why that would have been the case. And it's one of those things where I do think, you know, the Hawks are one of just a few teams that have the cap space. That's what it comes down to, sort of first and foremost here. The Hawks couldn't take Fareed back right now without sending salary back until July 1st, but the deal could be consummated or at least agreed to in June, and then I guess formally put through in July. You might remember that happened with Torian Prince and the Jeff Teague trade. It did not work under the salary cap until July, but that was basically all parties agreed to that deal well before the draft. They just couldn't announce it until after July 1st. But just as in terms of the actual player and the asset, $14 million is basically What Fareed is owed. Is about $13.7 million for next season. The number 14 pick is too much, I think personally, on its own, in order to just take back that salary, just because, you know, I guess it's the last spot in the lottery, but a top half of the first round draft pick is a bit of an overpay just to get off of that salary for one season. If you're wondering why Denver would want to do that kind of trade, it's because of the fact that they are trying to avoid massive luxury tax concerns. It looks like they're going to be offering Nikola Jokic at least a near max, not a full max deal this offseason. They're probably going to decline a team option, making him restricted and allowing him to be paid and not having basically any risk of him actually getting out of Denver. So without going too deep into the Nugget situation, they're trying to avoid, at least theoretically, luxury tax penalties, and they're going to be a very, very expensive team for next season. I posited on Twitter that's sort of a fake trade, in my opinion, of the number 14 pick and Fareed to Atlanta for the number 34 pick. going back to Denver, and even potentially the number 14 and Fareed for number 30 overall for the Hawks. You know, on Atlanta's end, it's pretty obvious. You know, Fareed is not completely dead money. I do think that he's basically just a pure backup at this point. Probably would be a $2 or $3 million player in today's NBA, just on the free market, making $13.5 million or so. So, you know, $10 million, maybe $11 million of dead money for next season, and in order to take back that that sort of penalty, if you're the Hawks, moving up, you know, 20 spots in the draft, 16 spots in the draft, would probably be worth that in a vacuum. I will say the Hawks are only a few teams this summer that actually have real cap space right now, at least that we can probably safely project. The other teams that have eight-figure projectable cap space are Chicago, Indiana, Brooklyn, Sacramento, the Lakers, and the Sixers. Of course, the Lakers and Sixers are probably not going to be in a mode where they're going to be looking to take an asset, try to grab an asset by sort of eating their cap space that way. So it's basically just a more rebuilding team that will be doing that. The Hawks, of course, famously did this last year by taking on Jamal Crawford's contract in order to get the number 30 pick in the draft. Obviously, 14 is a different animal than 30, but it's the same concept. The Hawks would be, of course, just basically taking back an asset, potentially even looking to buy out Fareed or maybe even moving on from him midseason if they wanted to do that, just to have him around the roster and have not have to worry about a roster spot necessarily. Of course, he does have some history with Melvin Hunt as well. Those guys worked together back in Denver. Nothing has been reported, I will say, and I have to stress that this is not a trade rumor right now. Nothing's been reported in terms of the Hawks and any interest there or any sort of link between the two. It's just one of those things that just makes common sense if Denver is actually willing to use the number 14 pick to get off of Fareed, which, of course, was reported by Woj, but that's not always, you know, that's one guy. I know Woj is extremely reliable. I'm not saying anything to the contrary there, but, you know, Denver could be looking to get a little bit more value out of that pick potentially, and, you know, it wouldn't blow me away if they traded it, frankly, because the Nuggets have a ton of young guys and a pretty jam-packed roster in a lot of ways, but in the same breath, that pick could probably land them a versatile four that they desperately need, frankly. I mean, I'm sure Wilson Chandler's going to be opting in probably in Denver, and as a result of that, it's probably one of the reasons why they would look to get rid of Fareed, but they're going to need something on the wing there defensively, and they could add someone like that in the draft. But, you know, until then, this is something to keep an eye on. They're not the only team in the league that could be a target for the Hawks to eat some salary in favor of an asset, but for now, that was the one that was widely reported, and we have to at least talk about it on this podcast. Moving on from there, one last thing, and that was from Mike Scotto of The Athletic. You released a mock draft, I guess, on Friday afternoon, and part of that people were asking me about, and I'm going to read what he wrote here exactly, and I quote, "Trade talks will intensify as the draft gets closer with 3 weeks to go. Keep an eye on the Atlanta Hawks, who have three first-round picks at 3, 19, and 30, and are in a talent acquisition mode," end quote. People were asking me what that means. I'm not sure it was anything super specific on the part of Scotto. He is very, very plugged in. I took it to believe, honestly, that the Hawks are just a team that makes a ton of sense to make a move at some point in this draft. And as a result of that, they're looking to potentially have them be a team to keep an eye on. Still, you know, talent acquisition mode is sort of a weird phrase that he used there. A couple people on Twitter were thinking that the Hawks were looking to sort of speed up the timeline of the rebuild. I'm not there at all, to be honest. I think the Hawks just want to get top-end talent, and if they're able to trade up and do that, that actually makes some sense. Trading down is, I think, a little bit less likely than trading up at this point. Still something that they actually absolutely could do in the near future. And by the way, that mock draft, it was actually a very, very interesting haul on the Hawks' part. They took Marvin Bagley at number 3 with DeAndre Ayton and Luka Doncic off the board in the top 2 there. And they followed that up with Troy Brown of Oregon at 19, Elie Okobo of France at number 30, and Melvin Frazier of Tulane at number 34. That'd be a great draft, in my opinion, for the Hawks. Not a perfect one necessarily, in my view, but about as good as you can reasonably ask for, in my opinion. So we'll get there, of course, in the near future. And of course, it's just one mock draft, but just a little bit of a high end hit there. I have my ear to the ground when it comes to. Basically anything that's being reported right now in terms of the Hawks and the draft. I'm trying to read every single thing that's out there and listen to every single thing that's out there. So if you see something that I haven't addressed and want to ask about it, please let me know, and we'll talk about as many rumors and weird things or situations as possible on the podcast between now and June 21st. Before we get into the NBA draft preview of sorts on this particular podcast, do I tell you guys to subscribe to the podcast if you've not done that already. I really appreciate everybody that's already done that. It's been a huge growing time here. Of course, it's June 1st now, but May was a great month for the podcast. I'm hoping June will be even bigger, and I really appreciate everybody that's already dialed in there. Please tell your friends, if you have a Hawks fan friend that really likes the team but hasn't necessarily found the podcast yet, please tell them to go ahead and do that. Subscribe, leave positive feedback, do all that fun stuff, and I really, really appreciate you guys' help in helping to grow the podcast. Moving on, we'll go into the point guards. As I said earlier in the podcast, it's going to be a focus on the point guards in this space, at least the draftable point guards for the Hawks, I should say, you know, top 35-ish kind of guys. What we will not be doing on the podcast today is talking about combo guards or guys I think are pure shooting guards potentially. So these guys will not be mentioned as a result of the fact that I'm not sure that they're actually going to be point guards or at least full-time point guards at the next level. No Lonnie Walker, no D'Anthony Melton, no Kyrie Thomas, no Dante DiVincenzo, Bruce Brown, Jerome Robinson, Shake Milton, or Landry Shamet. Also, other guys who I think are basically just pure twos, honestly, Josh Okogie, Anthony Simons, Grayson Allen, Hamidou Diallo, and Gary Trent Jr. Those guys will not be on the podcast. We're going to be talking about them later on in a different show, but I wanted to, just before anybody asks why these guys weren't involved in the podcast, I'm breaking down only pure point guards, at least guys who I am pretty confident are going to be playing point guard most of the time at the NBA level, and here we are with that list. In terms of second round, or maybe even maybe number 30-ish prospects, I think there's probably 3 to 5 guys on this list that could be there. I do think Devontae Graham is the lowest of guys who I would actually think is at least a reasonable target at number 34. Be a slight reach for me. I think I have him somewhere in the 38 to 40 range overall, but the Kansas veteran point guard projects as a backup at the NBA level, honestly. A little bit of a combo guard. I do think he's more of a point guard at the NBA level because of his defense and the fact that he just is sort of a caretaker type. Wouldn't be a very exciting pick, frankly, and I think the Hawks could probably do a little bit better upside wise at number 34 than Devontae Graham, but a pretty, you know, that'd be a pick where I wouldn't throw a fit if I was a Hawks fan at 34, because he's just a solid projectable backup point guard, and if they go upside with the other 3 picks, they could be looking for some safety and just a guy that they can play right away. He's a little bit on the older side as well, though, so Graham wouldn't be a guy that I would be taking at 34, but if the Hawks were to look, especially maybe move down from there, or move down from 30 in order to get multiple picks, if you had to pick somewhere in the 35 to 40 range, he'd make a lot of sense for basically any team that needs a backup point guard. Javon Carter is sort of in that mold as well, West Virginia's own. I think he's the best on-ball defender in this class, probably the best perimeter defender in this entire class, but he's pretty old and is not very big, doesn't have a ton of upside. Offensively, he's a guy I actually kind of like sneakily, but at the same time, never going to be a huge primary creator at the NBA level, and as a result of that, his stock is kind of what it is. I talked about him extensively with Tyler Jones on a recent podcast earlier in May, just as a proxy more than anything, because Carter's a guy who makes more sense on a team that's trying to compete right now. For instance, like the Philadelphia 76ers could really use Javon Carter, a guy who could play right now off the ball in the NBA as a sort of a point guard defensively, but more of a shooting guard probably offensively. Can at least initiate a little bit, but probably a little bit more low ceiling than someone the Hawks would want or always covet at 30-34. But you know, 34, I think he's one of the 34 best players in this draft. It's just one of those things where he is not the perfect fit for Atlanta, even if I like him quite a bit. There's been a lot of reporting out there with Carter that agents are not letting their guys compete against him in draft workouts, and that's because Carter is just a tenacious defender who's going to be really intimidating at the NBA level. He's not going to scare anybody, but I think he'd be an above average defensive point guard immediately in the NBA. It's just whether the offense plays up or not, but I think he can be a backup point guard probably tomorrow in the league. I'm just not sure the Hawks want that necessarily, but he's a worthy top 35 kind of player in this class. From there, we get into guys who are definitely worthy of consideration with Atlanta's picks. Eli Okobo, I mentioned a little bit earlier. He was the projected number 30 pick in that Athletic mock draft. I recommend thoroughly a scouting report that our own Graham Chappell over at Peachtree Hoops wrote up early in May about Okobo. A lot of video in there, just sort of a massive manifesto on him. Graham's been great for me to do a lot of these deep dives for us at PeachtreeHoops.com, especially for the international prospects, because of the fact that it's just hard to get tape on those guys, and Graham is, of course, over there in Ireland, which makes it a little bit easier for him to keep close tabs on these guys. But Okobo, a French point guard, he recently had 44 points in a playoff game. He's very, very young. He's been sort of skyrocketing up boards to the back where he's now projected widely as a first rounder, which is not where he was a couple of weeks ago, but I think it's probably pretty reasonable. I think he's a top 25, top 30 kind of guy in this class. Potential stash candidate if the Hawks wanted to take a guy and maybe leave him overseas for a year so they didn't have 4 rookies on their roster for 2019. They could certainly do that, but I think he's at least perfectly capable of coming over right now. Probably wouldn't be a very good player immediately because most rookies aren't, and of course he's very young, but still he's been an established quality player in a good league over there in Europe. So Okobo wouldn't blow anybody away probably in terms of being a sexy fan-based pick, but that's a guy I kind of like in this class, and I would encourage you guys to go watch some video on him and read about him on PeterHoops.com and that and the breakdown that Graham Chappell did. Elsewhere, a couple of guys at the Hawks briefly worked out last week. Jalen Brunson and Aaron Holiday are two guys who I think represent the top of a tier here. I do think Holiday and Brunson should be first-round picks in this class. I think Holiday's upside's a little bit higher. Brunson, I think, maybe a little bit safer. I'm not really sure, honestly. These guys are not that similar, but they're sort of similar in the way that I actually project them. That makes a little bit of sense. Holiday is a little bit more of a scorer, a little bit better athlete than Brunson in a lot of ways, but not necessarily quite as pure point guard-ish. Holiday is a very, very good creator offensively, and I think defensively he has great length, one of those guys that you could certainly project as a quality backup or maybe even low-end starter in the NBA. Brunson is a pure, sort of a pure, awesome caretaker kind of guy, obviously a huge winner at the college level. I'm not necessarily obsessed with that when it comes to evaluating draft prospects, but Brunson has earned his way into the first round with his just quality play. I think he could also be a sort of low-end starter, high-end backup. If you get that guy at 30, that's a huge one. Even at 19, I think both those guys would be at least reasonable picks. I wouldn't necessarily love that from an upside perspective at 19 overall, but I'll be the first to tell you, and I've said this to a lot of people in the last couple of weeks, if you can get a rotation player at 19, that's a really, really good result. I think last year, you know, John Collins going at 19 probably is going to spoil some Hawks fans in a lot of ways. Talked about this a little bit, but you know, even, you know, and the recent history at number 19 has actually been pretty good, going back to Jeff Teague. Even a lot of guys have been quality at that spot, but even if you look over up and down at the number 18 pick, in the last 6-7 years, it's a lot of busts. It's a lot of guys who probably even shouldn't be in the NBA right now. I do think you have to look and at least be reasonable about the fact that at 19, you could certainly get a guy who can be a starter in the NBA, but if you can just get a rotation player, that's a win, and I do think Brunson and Holiday are pretty safe to be that with a little bit of upside beyond that, especially when you're talking about Holiday. I'm not sure that even one of them will be around at 30. I do think at least one of them will be around at 19. Probably both of them, frankly, are at least somewhere in that range. So if the Hawks are desperately looking for a point guard, which I wouldn't necessarily be, it's a good time to talk about that now. I don't think the Hawks have to draft a point guard. I do think there's been a lot of people that are assuming that because of Dennis Schroeder and his weirdness and the situation there and potentially trading him. Even if the Hawks trade Dennis Schroeder, they don't have to draft a point guard in this class just because of the fact that you could just sign a stopgap point guard and you know, next year there's other ways to get a point guard for the future. It doesn't have to be in this draft. And because of where the Hawks are picking, you know, number three is too high, as we're going to talk about, I think, in my opinion, to draft anybody in this class at point guard. 19 is a little bit, you know, it basically would be only the two guys that we're talking about here, Holiday and Brunson, as options for me. And maybe if you want to reach for Okobo a little bit, that wouldn't be awful. But those three guys are probably the only ones that are first round lock kind of talents. So you don't have to do it. I do see the logic in that if you want to move on from Dennis and have a guy who you can at least you know, call your guy moving forward, at least in the short term. But for me, I don't really see, outside of the top three or four guys in this class, solid, you know, projected starting quality point guards. I do think, again, that Brunson and Holiday are capable of being starters, but I don't think either one of those guys likely outcome is going to be a top 15 point guard in the league, and I think ideally you want that kind of guy. So we'll get there eventually, but I don't think it's a necessity, even if I really, really like Aaron Holiday and I really, really like Jalen Brunson especially. Moving on from there to the top three guys, consensus-wise, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Colin Sexton, and, of course, Trae Young. We'll start with Gilgeous-Alexander first. He's the one guy on this list that I'm not sure is a point guard. I do think if you draft him in the lottery, you're hoping he's a point guard because that would bring a lot of extra value to you. And I actually sort of flirted with leaving him off this list, but because he's being evaluated by most people as a point guard, I want to at least talk about him in that way. He's got great size, great length. He's got very, very little body fat. He's very, very skinny right now, but also at least relatively strong, and his length is sort of off the charts. He had a great second half of the season for Kentucky. I really like Gilgeous-Alexander. Actually, if you were asking me who I'd rather draft right now in a vacuum between Gilgeous-Alexander and Sexton, I would take Gilgeous-Alexander. There's a lot of Hawks fans, probably because of the fact that he's a local product, Colin Sexton, and because he played at Alabama. There's a lot of crossover there between Bama fans and Hawks fans, and at least in some ways in Atlanta. I think people are obviously drawn to Sexton, and I think he was obviously a more productive college player in a lot of ways. I think Gilgeous-Alexander's ceiling is higher than Sexton's. I think Sexton plays incredibly hard, and he has a great motor. It's easy to root for the kid because he plays so hard all the time. He's a great competitor. Everyone that's ever been around him will say that, and as a result of that, I think he has a very, very high floor because he's a good athlete. He plays really hard. I think he's going to be an NBA quality point guard for a long time. With that said, I'm not sure what the path is for Sexton to be a top 15-ish point guard in the league. He's going to have to make a lot more shots than he makes now. I don't really believe in the jump shot, frankly, and one of those things where he's not a nuclear athlete. He's a good athlete, but I think his athleticism plays up more because he plays so hard, but at the NBA level, that won't necessarily be the case where he's jumping off the screen at you. Gilgeous Alexander isn't this fantastic athlete either, but he's a lot longer than Sexton, and that really, really helps when you're projecting a guy at the NBA level. I do think there's certainly a lot wider range of outcomes for Gilgeous Alexander just because of the fact that he's more of a project than Sexton. I think if you want safety, you want Sexton, no doubt about it. But Gilgeous Alexander is 6'6 with a 6'11 and a half wingspan. If you think he's a primary point guard, there's a lot of doors that can be unlocked with a player of that size and that length. Whereas Sexton is measured it at 6'1 and a half with a 6'7 wingspan, which is perfectly fine as a point guard. He was pretty skinny in a lot of ways. He was actually weighed in at 183 pounds. Gilgeous Alexander, though, is comically skinny, I will say, as I mentioned before, weighed in 180 pounds. So he has 5 inches in length on both wingspan and height over Sexton, but actually weighs a little bit less. So that's a guy who's going to need an NBA weight program, going to need a lot of things. But I do think, upside-wise, he has higher upside. Sexton, again, it's safe. I don't think, there's been a lot of questions about the Hawks potentially looking to trade up for Colin Sexton. I don't blame the Hawks fans for wanting to do that. If you can get Sexton somewhere in that, 9 to 13, 14 range, that's perfectly fine. I think he's a reasonable pick there. I don't necessarily see the upside that some other people see, but if you can get that guy in the late lottery, I'm okay with that. I don't think you need to move heaven and earth to do that, though, because he's not this, fantastic value there. There are other guys I'd rather have in that range in a vacuum, and because of the fact that I don't really think you have to draft the point guard again in this class, that probably dings him a little bit more, and I'm well aware that I'm higher on Gilgeous Alexander than some people are. I'll be the first to mention that, but that's a guy I really, really like, and if you watch him on tape for long enough, it's pretty easy to see why you like him in terms of the projection upside. It's sort of a question of what the Hawks want to be. Again, this is one of those things where I talked about this with Tyler on previous podcasts as well. It's all about kind of what you want to find in a draft pick this year. If you want upside, I think Gilgeous Alexander has more of it. If you want a little bit more safety, Sexton. So those guys are pretty close in my mind, even if there's probably a lot of fans that don't necessarily agree with them being as close as I have them on my board. Last but not least, There's a guy named Trae Young, who is very, very polarizing in a lot of ways. Young was fantastic this year. There's no way around that. Trae Young's production at the college level was as crazy as anything you'll ever see, frankly, especially early in the season. He ended up leading the country in both scoring and assists over a full season. That's pretty insane at a major college program. Trae Young averaged 27.4 points per game, 8.7 assists per game, while scoring at reasonable efficiency. It dipped considerably in the second half of the season, but still finished the year with 59% true shooting, a 28 PER. He was just fantastic, frankly. But he did slow down sort of when the book got out on Trae Young. He definitely slowed down a little bit. And of course, he didn't have a ton of help at Oklahoma. People point to his record down the stretch of the season. That's not all on Young by any stretch of the imagination. He didn't play as well in the second half of the season. But the talent level of the Oklahoma team is very, very low as well. I'll be the first to tell you that Trae Young probably has the highest offensive ceiling of any perimeter player in this class, and that includes Luka Doncic. I do think Trae Young, his ultimate ceiling, Doncic is the only other guy in this class that I think can even consider matching Young's ultimate offensive ceiling if everything went perfectly. The Steph Curry comps I don't love, but I think if you have to tell me one guy, if you really like Trae Young, you have to think he can be a Steph Curry-ish kind of player because of the fact that he has the ball in his hands so often, because of the fact that he's very, very slight frame, and he was terrible on defense. Curry's not terrible on defense, that's the first thing you have to say. I do think the Curry that we have now is a far better defender than I ever think Young is going to be at the NBA level. That's one thing that scares me to death. I think if you're a long-time listener to the podcast, you would know that defense matters to me probably more than it does to most people. And because of that, I'm going to be lower on Trae Young because Trae Young is an absolutely terrible defensive basketball player right now. He could be to the point where he's passable in his NBA career. That's kind of all you can hope for is a guy that's just not horrible. But right now, I think he probably projects to be one of the worst defensive point guards in the league. And that's tough for me to swallow. You have to be, if you are going to be that kind of defender, you have to be an awesome offensive player, and he can be that. That's one of the things, again, philosophically, if you're looking for upside, and a lot of Hawks fans want a star in this draft, a quote-unquote star, a more traditional star, and that means offense, that means scoring, that means box score numbers. If you want that guy, I understand people that want Trae Young. I totally get it because of the fact that he has off the charts upside. His shooting ability is real. Only 36% from three at the college level, but some of that, of course, is just the shot selection quality that he was taking throughout the season. I think he can be a better shooter than that. For me, though, my favorite attribute of Trae Young, aside from obviously being able to shoot off the dribble, is a huge skill in the NBA right now. He's a great passer. His passing vision, his passing IQ, and just the fact that he can execute high-end passes is really, really sort of suffocating, and one of the things that you have to like about him. If you love him at number three overall, it's because of the fact that you think he's, offensively, he can be an elite-level player. I'm a little bit more worried about that than most people are. Let me just say that right now. I can't project him to be a great offensive player. And because of that, I wouldn't take him number three overall. It's just something I wouldn't do. I will say, I have Trae Young, in the top eight on my board. And as a result of that, it's sort of a mix of the fact that I think his ceiling is top two or three in this class. And because of the fact of that, and just the importance of having offensive creator in today's NBA, that allows you to take a little bit more of a risk on him and have him be a top eight player. I do think, though, he has the lowest floor of anybody that I would project in the top 8 to 10, maybe even more than that, probably even top 12 in this class. I think Michael Porter Jr. is the only other guy who I think has a potentially as low of a floor, and that's because of his back. If Michael Porter was healthy, he would not have close to as low of a floor as Trae Young. I think Trae Young could be out of the league in 3-4 years if things do not go perfectly. That's obviously an extreme scenario, but I think of the comp that I would use to Trae Young if you want to get worried is Jimmer Fredette. Jimmer's been an awesome player in China, but I think he could play in the NBA right now, but at the same time he was out of the league with haste because of the fact that when the spacing wasn't there, when he couldn't create space for himself, all that fun stuff. I'm not projecting Trae Young to be Jimmer Fredette by any means. I think that's a possible outcome, a pretty unlikely one. I think his most likely outcome is probably what Jason Walker was saying on a recent podcast that we listened to. If you guys missed that one, I would encourage you guys to go back and listen to it. But he thinks of Trae Young as a sort of a high-end six-man offense-only spark plug off the bench, sort of in a, I think he used the Lou Williams comp. I don't love that one necessarily, but more of a, if you're looking for a best-case possible scenario for me, reasonably, I would think 2 years ago, Isaiah Thomas, this incredible offensive player that's a huge defensive liability, and because of that, he was still an awesome player. Isaiah Thomas had a great sort of all-NBA level season 2 years ago. I think that's probably what you're looking for Trae Young if he becomes that kind of player. But I don't know. It's easy to get suffocated either way on Trae Young. That's the first thing that I will say. I totally get if you have him in your top three, as some people that I think are very, very smart do. I understand why. His offensive ceiling is huge, and because everybody needs offensive ceiling, especially the Hawks don't have a ton of that on their current roster moving forward. And especially if you were to remove Dennis Schroeder, they don't really have much of that at all. I can see why you want Trae Young. And then there's the other school of thought where there's people that I know that I trust that don't have him in the top 10, and it's because of his incredibly low floor, in my opinion. So I'll split the difference a little bit in that way. I think he's a top 7 or 8 prospect in this class. I wouldn't take him number 3 overall. If you want to tell me that you think it's a good idea to trade down and get more assets and potentially take Young at 6 or 7, I would be okay with that. But you got to tell me what that kind of value package is, and it gets very difficult to just say, I want to trade down. That's something fans all like to say, especially in the NFL draft, even in the NBA draft. It's like, I want to trade down. He's not worth it there. Well, it'd be great to trade down if you can get great value, but you have to go tell me what kind of package you're going to get from somebody else, and why is that team looking to move up? Do you think, recently a couple people that I trust have told me they'd rather have Trae Young than guys like Mo Bamba or Jaren Jackson. I don't agree necessarily. I do understand it, but I think value wise, it's tough for me to justify. Even if you like Trae Young a lot at number 3 overall, it just feels high to me. Just all my scouting, it just feels too high. I get it. And I wouldn't necessarily throw a fit. I think the only guy that's sort of a consensus top 7 or 8 guy in this class that I would actually just be, sort of apoplectic about if I was a Hawks fan is Michael Porter Jr. He's the only guy that I would not touch in the top 7 or 8. Young, I don't love it. To be honest with you, I wouldn't take him at number 3. And I think my writing is probably sort of lending itself to that in recent days. I think I've been pretty clear about the fact that I'd be choosing between Doncic, Ayton, Bagley, and Jackson Jr. regardless at number 3 overall, with potential addition of Mo Bamba. But I think he's a pretty solid fifth for me. So outside of that top 5, you have that Trae Young tier. You have Mikal Bridges. That's kind of my next two guys on my board. Then you get to another little tier drop off before you get to Porter and, Miles Bridges, a couple other guys in that class. So maybe go just Alexander, et cetera. So yeah, I mean, that's just my opinion. Of course, we're going to talk more about Trae Young on the podcast in the next couple of weeks. Of course, every time we have a guest on, pretty much we have to talk about Young in some way, because he is so polarizing, because he is so famous, and because, you know, you have a huge swing of just the fan base. I talked to a lot of fans on Twitter. Some of them would be, you know, out of their minds upset if the Hawks don't draft Trae Young, and some of them will be out of their minds upset if the Hawks do draft Trae Young. And it's kind of a perfect example of what you're dealing with Trae Young, because of the fact that he's sort of a Jekyll and Hyde player. The top end outcome of Trae Young is awesome. The bottom end outcome of Trae Young is really ugly, and that's a challenge. So that's going to wrap it up on the podcast today. If you have questions, please forward them on to me at BT Rolled on Twitter, at Locked On Hawks on Twitter. I really appreciate everybody listening to the podcast. For sure, enjoy your weekend. And if nothing else happens news-wise, we'll be back again next week to talk more about the draft and more about whatever's going on in Hawksland. So stay tuned for that.